Hi, welcome to Pot as a Woman. I'm Eli Olsberg.
I'm Teresa Lee.
Very excited. Oh my God, we're almost at the end of the album.
It's almost over.
It's so sad and exciting.
She keeps dropping singles, though.
I know. Which, by the way, for anyone listening, we're recording this on the day that Boyfriend dropped.
Was it today? Oh, yeah. Last night.
Yeah. Only because it was midnight East Coast time. But we are going to do an episode about it.
Yes.
We're actually very excited.
We're
not going to talk about it now, but aside from the few songs left on this album, we're still going to do that one.
Yeah.
So, but today we're going to talk about Seven Rings.
Who do we have on the pod?
Lindsay Adams.
Hello.
Fake Stuff with Lindsay.
Uh-huh. Welcome.
Hi, guys. So stoked to be here. Big fan of the show.
Oh.
Pod really is a woman.
Pod is a woman. Who is Pod? Let's talk about Pod.
Pod is a construct of the patriarchy.
I was just gonna say something similar.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, yes.
Important thing is I got there first.
Absolutely.
As the patriarchy does.
That is.
Did have a head start.
I do think women should speak second. Okay. I'll stop because.
And you're outnumbered.
You are canceled.
And you're canceled.
You live by the sword, you get canceled by it.
No.
I don't know what that means.
Lindsay, what's your relationship with Ariana Grande? Are you a fan? When did you become a fan? Or do you not like her music?
Wouldn't it be funny if I didn't? Have you ever had anybody on that didn't?
Yes,
okay. Yeah. I didn't listen to those episodes.
Sounds like you didn't listen to any episodes because you're the first person.
Canceled.
Yeah, speaking of canceled, no.
Lick my balls. Okay, let me tell you about my relationship with Ariana Grande. Jeez. One, I do like her. I'm fascinated by her because she's kind of just like, anybody that loves that makes choices in love that publicly and boldly with like the commitment. I think she's a Cancer.
Yeah.
So she's like a deep, like she's like a very sick Cancer. Like she's like, it's insane. Anybody that can love that hard and really believe that they're loving that hard is so fascinating to me.
Well, I think Cancer and Pisces, you really got a good deal with being a Scorpio because I feel like that's the only water sign.
Lindsay's least favorite sign.
I know. Wow.
Well,
what
listen,
are you again?
I'm coming around Sagittarius.
That's right. Okay.
So, I am a Cancer rising.
Me too. That's why we do get along.
Yeah.
Well, I'll just say this. I think Scorpios are the only water signs that can like do their
hide
own
our
thing.
Feelings.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Not just hide your feelings, but also like put them on display if you want. Like it's very. There's like loyalty there.
You almost said manipulative,
no.
And I caught that.
Not true.
There's like subtleties. You can be subtle about it where other water signs cannot.
Cancer and Pisces are truly. It's too much. I'm drowning. I'm literally. Leo sinking at the end of Titanic.
Yeah.
I am that meme.
Huh.
No, yeah. I 100% agree.
By the way, not a knock on either of them. I've dated them and I'll probably end up dating them again.
Wow, I could never. They look like wild animals to me with their emotions.
How I feel is like when I see what Ariana is doing, I'm like, that's how I feel inside. So what I think Scorpios are is like, we have all that, but we just are too proud to let it out.
Right.
And so like sometimes it comes out or to our close friends, it comes out. And then for the most part, I'm just alone, like, like crying. And then people are like, I didn't know you had that in you. So I really do relate to her heart, but I guess that's why it's my rising. But
yeah,
no,
yeah.
But I genuinely feel like she is being honest in a way where I'm almost like, oh my God, stop. Like,
true.
You know what I mean? Where I'm like, oh no, stop tweeting about your mental breakdowns.
Well, I think Cancers embrace it, whereas Pisces don't.
Yes.
I think they try to like be like, okay, it was someone else did this.
Right.
So yeah,
exactly.
Who do I need to hurt?
Yeah, who's responsible?
But I like her. Other than that, her music, like her her last two albums were great. Yeah. I love them.
Wonderful.
That's like great. Really when I got on board. Also, I got on board like near the end, like kind of when she was with Mac Miller.
Mm-hmm.
Just because that was interesting.
Yeah.
And I was trying to figure out what she was doing. I love, like, I'm obsessed with her love life. It's very interesting. And I also like that I like that she's kind of a dick.
yeah, she's got a sharp wit.
It's like full self-centered cancer in a way that like I don't mind watching. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Like I'm like, lick the donut, bitch. Who cares? We know you're not sorry. We know you're not sorry.
Yeah. Why did Demi put out a song called Sorry Not Sorry? Oh my God.
No, I feel like she also, and this is like speculation, but I have tried to watch like documentaries and things of that sort just because I like am very interested. And
on who? On Ariana?
Are you talking about the Dangerous Woman Diaries?
Mm-hmm. Are you talking about that? Yeah, I watched the first episode.
I just don't feel like it was very revealing.
No, I don't think it was revealing at all. I think it was. I think it was a good. I think it's kind of the truth lies somewhere in the middle about it being fluff and raw. I think it's like because there were moments that were that show the tour. Like what tour life is like, which is sitting usually in a green room for a very long time doing vocal warm ups, and like it does a good job of catching the mundaneness,
right?
Yeah.
But I think that in between that, then it just cuts to these really great arena performances she's doing, and they're very well edited.
Yeah, I mean, it's gonna take a lot to top Katy Perry's documentary that just like really fucking caught me off guard and
what about Never Say
broke
Never?
Me. I didn't see that.
That is really good.
Yeah,
is it?
It is really well.
I thought it was good. Yeah, I saw it back when that was one of the first things that Netflix, when they became a streaming service, like one of their actual real movies that they got. Because I don't know if you remember, for the first few years that they existed, they didn't have shit. And when they did have a movie, they'd be like, look, we got this very recent 2-year-old movie, and that's all you could watch.
I love it.
Anyway.
I will see. I'll watch that.
That's how I saw it.
I watched the Katy Perry documentary on a plane because I thought it was a plane movie. For sure, not a plane movie. Not a public, not an in public movie even. By you saw way, it, right?
I didn't see it.
You didn't?
Yeah, I didn't either. By the way, you guys know who directed Never Say Never, right?
Who? Fast and Furious. Not Fast and Furious. Justin, whatever his name is.
John Chu.
John Chu.
Who directed
Really?
Crazy
Rich Asians. Yes.
Yeah. Step Up.
And Step Up and
League of Extraordinary
and
Dancers.
Did he not do a
Fast and the Furious? Oh, I'm thinking of who's the Fast and the Furious Asian
you're
guy?
You're thinking of
he did Tomorrow Never Dies. Yeah,
no, he did Better Luck Tomorrow.
What's Tomorrow Never Dies? Wow,
that's a Bond movie.
I have no idea.
And you know what's so ironic?
Oh, I'm
you're
lost.
Asian.
No,
we're
here's
not,
the thing. All of the things I said were right in my head because like that's what I meant.
Yeah. By the way,
so I'm not incorrect.
His
but
name
also
is his name is Justin Lin.
Justin Lin. Yes.
Better Luck Tomorrow is
John Chu did
a masterpiece.
Crazy Rich Asians.
I thought that was a very underrated movie. Just gonna put that out there. Anyone?
Oh,
listening?
I mean, if yeah. Well, there's no time for this, but you guys should look up the story of how he got that funded. It's insane.
It is.
It involves MC Hammer.
I will. So, but yeah, last two
that didn't
albums.
That sound sincere, by the way.
Well, because I don't know any of the movies you're talking about except for Crazy Rich Asians. I checked out.
Ariana, you're a fan, but I totally know what you mean about not feeling like you know, like you're like, is she sincere or is she not, right? Is that what you're like?
Yeah,
you're
like I feel like parts, yes, but then I'm also like, are you just like fucking brilliant at playing this game?
Yeah.
Like I don't think she's that smart, but I also, yeah, I don't know. I like that she talked about mental health. I think like her, I mean, granted, I know she doesn't write her songs by herself, despite what Seven Rings says, but the shit that she says, I'm kind of like, wow. Like when you say stuff that, like Taylor Swift, I don't care for.
We've had some opinions on
that. Taylor Swift, and when she writes songs about exes, it's like, you know, guess who? Like it's like,
oh,
like it's like,
I like
really,
that read a lot.
Yeah, like it's really like cheeky and like.
Oh my God.
And Ariana Grande's like, and we had sex, like,
oh my God,
like
yeah.
It's just like we were naked, like,
no, totally. It has this very like Taylor's always just like, my soul is bruised, my heart is broken. You know what I mean? Like, it's very these poetic, and then like my brain, the only thing left.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Oh
and then Ariana is like, we fucked on a roof,
yeah, exactly,
yes.
And we forgot. We didn't have safe sex that one time.
Yeah,
you know what
exactly.
I mean? Like it's very, and Taylor Swift is like, I'm still wearing a purity ring. And she's not. I'm pushing it a little
there. It's
definitely
very imagey.
But
like,
it's very wholesome.
I would be more mad if I was an ex that Taylor Swift wrote a song about me and benefited from like half investing in our relationship than I would if like legit, Like, we're not going to talk about other songs on the album, but Ghostin'.
Yeah.
Ooh, my favorite.
Such a good song.
My absolute favorite.
Well, because Ariana, I think you hit the nail on the head. You said she's honest. So it's like, even if it's not what you agree with, like, let's say there are, you know, there's another side to the story or whatever, as there always is with relationships. You know that's her truth that she's putting out there, or that's how it feels like. With Taylor, it feels like she's trying to control a narrative, literally.
Yes. By the way, Alamo Drafthouse just opened in Los Angeles. People don't know that's a movie theater chain.
Oh, yeah, I know.
Like very, yeah, I know.
I've been hearing a lot about it.
But I am, one thing they are doing is they're throwing a Taylor Swift music video dance party in one of their theaters. And there's part of me that kind of wants to go to that. Because if they play like the old hits, like,
she
like from
doesn't
Red.
Have dance music.
Yeah, no, you're right.
She does now that she's started appropriating, but that's my own.
I'm never like, I'm going to go to a dance party. I hope they play Taylor.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, I mean, she got producers that are,
she's got a couple, but that's just, I don't connect her to like, you know, like I think like Kylie Minogue is a pop star that has dance music.
Yeah, yeah.
Taylor is a pop star that.
Whoa, you're really reaching back on that one.
Well, I just mean like there's certain pop stars that do that well where you're I'm going to go to dance and I hope they play these stars. I've never thought, I hope I can shake my butt to Taylor tonight.
No, and her stuff that does have choreo almost has, like, I remember when she did when 22 came out, that song is too cute for its own good. Do you know what I mean?
It's a karaoke
like,
song.
Like, yeah, and when I was watching her perform it live, it is this thing where the choreo is almost like, you know, just people kind of jumping in the air in sync and you know, not like
that whole Shake It Off thing was like the worst thing I've ever seen in my entire life. That
I
was
have to admit, I think 1989 is a pretty fucking great album.
Sure. I'll never forgive her though for like looking as happy as she did, like shaking herself like a fucking fool.
Oh yeah. Terrible video. Yeah, this really always somehow becomes the throw shade at Taylor Pod.
I'm totally fine with that. But I will say, like, Ariana Grande's last couple albums have not had a ton of like, have not had the same kind of like yearning to be played in the club.
No, they're not bops
and,
at all.
And like, I love, that's part of what I love about it, because it does remind me of old Mariah Carey in a lot of
and
ways.
And I just said, by the way, for people listening, I said they're not bops, but not bops in that way. They're fucking great songs. But yeah, you're not listening to Ghost at the club.
Yeah, exactly.
Seems like she wanted to put on an album that spoke her truth and then like, we will play it wherever we want because it's good. Not because she was like, ooh, how do I manufacture the perfect dance
right,
song?
Exactly.
Yeah, and they literally picked, like, from Thank You Next, I feel like the singles were, like, the boppiest.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. With the exception of, I think Bloodline's a dancey song that didn't make the cut in that way.
Yeah.
But
it's a little reggae.
Yeah.
Reggae.
What are you doing, a Robert De Niro impression?
Because I feel it's like it's like how I picture a white woman dancing to reggae.
Sure.
Just like, ooh.
Yeah.
Well, shake
Zumba
my body.
Yeah.
Shake my body. Why don't you?
So let's talk about the song.
Great.
So we're going to talk about Seven Rings. And you like Seven Rings.
I like Seven Rings.
Yeah. Okay,
I mean, if you sample the right song, I'll like it. And I'm not like, I don't feel cheapened by it.
Well, yeah, it occurred to me on the way over that we did talk about this song when we did the episode.
When it first
I think
came
it was
out.
About Successful. That was like the episode we covered it on.
But that was when it first came out. And,
yeah, we talked about more about the music video.
Yeah, and we talked a lot about the Princess Nokia controversy.
Oh, yeah.
So we definitely dived into that a lot there. But we didn't really go too much into the lyrics.
No,
the song.
Totally.
I mean, I do feel like Thank You Next is one of her more problematic. Like when
Thank
people.
You Next?
The whole album.
Not Thank
or the
You
song?
Next. I'm so sorry. Oh, Seven Rings.
Yeah.
I do feel like Seven Rings was one of the more problematic songs and video. Like, I get it.
Yeah.
And I'm definitely not going to defend it, but fun song, man.
The song
I like it.
Yeah, it has grown on me as a bop. I do think it says a lot about her her popularity that, like, I think she took all that stuff to heart in that after all that came out, she's kind of just like moved on and tried to put out more new stuff, kind of, but not to bury it. She's not like pulling it. Like, it still became the number one and did all that.
Yeah.
So it says a lot to her that it could still keep getting played. She could still be proud of it while, like, you know, you see that she's like emphasizing the newer stuff after that.
It still, by the way, has like a very, I think why it got so much play as well, why people are like, okay, it did have these things that we do need to talk about, but why people still like it a lot too.
Yeah.
Is because, it's also a very like girl powery anthem, but sincerely so. Not like it, not like We Are Never Getting Back Together or whatever, you know.
Right. Yeah. And it's like, it's obviously supposed to be fun and stupid. Again, it's like the honesty thing. And also, again, she's not the only one that she did not write and produce this by herself.
She is open about that, even if she flexes about it on the song.
Right, but I'm saying if somebody attacks, like, depending on what kind of thing you're looking at in terms of appropriation, like, there are people of color on her team that I have no idea what that's like, but I can only imagine if that's like as close as you get. And then they're like, we hate it. Appropriation. You're like, no, come on. I'm here.
I wrote it.
Yeah. No, it's mine. You know?
Yeah, yes, totally.
100%. And they're her friends. It's not even like, it's not like with Miley and Taylor, and I like Miley, but it's not like those pop stars when they get to a certain age and like, now we'll bring in our, like, urban producers, and so obvious what they're doing. They're like switching the sound from Disney to that.
We've talked about it at length on here, but it never gets old.
Right, but with Ariana, it's like this is her team from the beginning. Like she's been working some childhood friends, Victoria Monet, like since the beginning, and it doesn't feel like she was doing this like inauthentic thing. It felt
I don't think Victoria Monet is a. I think they're professional. I think they became friends.
But they've been working together for a long time, right?
I want to say for the last few albums, but I don't know. Actually, you know what? Before we pull up the, I'm going to look this up right now. Cause I had the song information, but I want to see where she started getting, cause she's been writing songs for a while. It looks like.
Yeah.
So what it says here is, with songs that she wrote. Okay. Songwriting. In 2010, she helped write "I Hate That You Love Me" by Diddy Dirty Money, and went on to co-write songs such so "Be All Right," "Let Me Love You."
Yeah, so "Let Me Love You." That's one of my favorites.
Interesting.
She did. Like,
this is funny. Sorry, I just have to say, when I googled Ariana Grande and Victoria Monet, when people also asked, what ethnicity is Victoria Monet? And then when I open it, it says American, which is like, Google. Because I know that's not what they were asking.
I know.
And then it also says,
what kind of brown?
Okay, so here's how far back she goes. She's been credited on like a lot of T.I. songs, some Nas songs.
Oh, interesting.
Coco Jones. You know what? You're right. She goes back to Yours Truly. She co-wrote. She has a writing credit for Honeymoon Avenue and Daydreamin'.
Ariana's posted stuff about them going way back, and that's maybe where that.
Oh, and Only One.
Okay, so she's like an OG.
Yeah. I mean, so that's the thing, though, is like, that's why I think it is confusing, is because it is coming from a whole team. She's the, you know, she's the epicenter. And I'm not defending anything because, like, you know, there are parts where it's like, well, I don't know what to tell you. That looks like appropriation. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Sure.
Like, I get it. But at the same time, I think, like, if you're surrounded by, you know, people of color or like, you know, people that are like, yeah, this is great. This was like a joint idea. We want like sing this, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like speculating. Then it's like, how do you, it's.
Yeah. You're at that point just criticizing her essence, which is that she's white.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Which is like,
yeah. And she made poppy music and erased like her writers of color, then it would feel even worse. So it's like, I
totally.
Don't know.
Yeah. So it's confusing. It's that whole thing where it's like, you know, people employ you. So like, you don't want to like bite the hand that feeds, but I don't even know the situation. But at the same time, you're like, why am I beholden to you?
Yeah.
But it's confusing, but it's also like, I mean, I think, if she defended herself with what I just said, I would judge her.
Sure. I think she also, what's interesting about it is that she's worked with Pharrell on the album before this.
Right.
Like, I think anybody, I think she does have a team telling her, like, maybe be a little careful here or there, maybe slow it down.
Sure.
But ultimately, I don't know that, something I've been thinking about a lot is that when she's making something like this, she's probably not going to be aware of it until the product is out.
But see, this is why with this specific video, I thought she was feeling like, because I thought she was leaning into Japanese culture a lot in this video, but Japanese culture that borrows from Black culture, like American.
Yeah, it was
Black
like
culture.
A weird.
But that's a thing Japanese culture does because of the way American hip hop has transcended, like, has gone global, right? And it's really infused into like hip hop all around the world, especially in Asia. And Asians have a totally different relationship with hip hop because they didn't grow up in the context of American history. And so then when you're, it's like this refracted mirror, when then you're copying Japanese hip hop, which already is copying American hip hop, it's, and then you're not neither of those things, then you look like you're just appropriating American hip hop.
Well, I think, and I think that also, when people like, it's so funny because when she also is like a fan of Studio Ghibli movies.
Yeah.
And like is very open about that stuff. So, I wonder often, because what's funny is to maybe even make that conversation even more circular, anime is really big with black people.
Yeah. Right? And I don't think Asian culture has the same relationship with appropriating. Not that they can't. I think they should have that conversation. But just like because the history is just different, it's not steeped in the same nuance. Like I think a lot of it's just aesthetic for them.
Well,
it's truly just aesthetic, you know. And and they should learn. But I think when you see someone in America doing it, you, especially if you're white, like you can't just be like, oh, I just like how it looks. It's like you can't ignore that growing up here, because then you're choosing to ignore.
Oh, I would even say here's the other thing. I might have bought this up on an episode way while back, but I when I was in grad school, I had I went to a thing. I believe it was CAPE, which is an Asian organization.
Yeah, Coalition of Asian Pacific Entertainers. Yeah,
I went to a they came to my school and spoke, and they talked about. One of the things that they talked about at the panel was that Asian culture, and specifically in pop culture and especially in cinema, and I think this actually carries over to music videos and music in general, is when a black film comes out, it's a community thing. You know what I mean? Like black people will go out and watch that movie. Mm-hmm. Spanish culture, pretty much the same thing. Asian culture is the only culture that's built on assimilation, where if you live in the U.S., what you're doing is you're blending in as much as you can within the community you're in.
Yeah, well, because that wasn't a lot of screen representation. So I think people try to identify, because you see both ways. You see kind of like highly educated, like American dreamy Asians who move here for school and then they assimilate to like kind of white suburban culture. And then you see the opposite end where like cause there's, I dance on an all Asian hip hop team. You know, there's like Asian people who then want to connect to a culture and then they kind of connect to like black culture more.
Right.
But then you don't really get very much representation on mainstream media for just like being an Asian American. You didn't. Now there's a little bit more. So then it starts feeling, it is kind of weird. Cause it's like, my hip hop team, I feel like a lot of them, you could call it appropriation, but also like, it became its own thing. Like Asian hip hop became its own thing.
It's such like a very fine line to walk, I think, with like appropriation now, because I think there are like very obvious cases. But then I also think that like, and I'll say this like as a white person who has to just like learn everything like a big dum-dum, like as I, you know, as much as I can beforehand, but then also like, oh man, that comes from that, you know?
Oh, totally.
But it's hard because it's like, I think that, you know, black culture, for example, they've created so many like incredible, unique aspects to art and entertainment and media and fashion and like all this stuff that like, I think there's such a fine line between genuinely like appreciating and admiring it and then being like, and it's mine.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. And I don't know what that line is. So I try not to fuck with it, but like, cause it's like, go Ariana, like do your thing.
Well, I'll say this, most things that have become like sayings or anything that's been like put into the lexicon that's like become really popular. I don't know why off the top, because I know why, because I've been up since 6 this morning, but like I'm trying to think like a lot of terms when people say things like, oh, like yes queen.
Yeah, absolutely.
That didn't come from black women. Like it did. Go off sis, that kind of stuff. Like when people and it's crazy because everybody just uses it now. Yeah. And I think, well, it comes from two places. It comes from, if it doesn't come from black women, it comes from queer culture.
Well, used to take from black culture. Yeah. I mean, like, it's all, you know, you can follow, it's the idea of sharing this, like, feeling of being in the minority. But totally. Yes, that's, it's, historically, a lot of that comes from, like, then it was in, like, the voguing culture and, like, sort of underground. Oh, yeah.
I mean, have you guys ever seen Paris is Burning?
I have not. No.
That's a really important documentary to see. It's the basis of Pose, kind of.
Oh, okay.
The show on FX, which I just finished the first season. I liked it a lot, and I thought like it really. Paris is Burning is a documentary from 1990 that was like really big about the culture of like you know, drag and stuff, and like particularly voguing and one of the things that I think is. And also, I don't know if people remember this at the time, but Madonna was the person who bought that into the mainstream.
Right, we talked about that here.
And it's interesting because there were kind of cries that she was appropriating, but then a lot of people were like, oh, but she's also one of the only people at the time who spoke very highly of protecting gay people and upsetting the status quo.
Yeah.
A lot of times those like harbingers, like people who are actually like the Madonnas, the Arianas, who are actually in that community or around it and trying to learn, they have access to another world. Like, so then her audience is not that aware. And so I think this is where it gets tricky, is like the little young white teenagers who listen and then do it. And then that is like 2 degrees removed. And then it doesn't look like they're aware. So I think that's where it's like, it's just good for everyone to learn. Because I think with,
you're totally
I'm thinking like Dirty Dancing as that movie, the writer, she, you know, was a dancer and she had gone to these she would go to like literally like a summer camp, like a Jewish camp or something with her family. But then she, I think, went out and danced. I'm like paraphrasing what I remember from the story, but she went and would go to these like clubs, and it's like she saw Dirty Dancing. And so she was trying to capture that feeling in the movie. But for a lot of the audience who hadn't seen that before, a lot of white people, they, you know, it became this craze, right? And then, of course, then young people wanted to do that. But it was coming from another degree, not from having experienced it, but from having seen it on a screen.
Sure.
And so then now you're getting, like, the, like, kind of diluted version, and then you're getting people, like, quote-unquote, appropriating.
That's when I think that is when it gets a little weird, but to your point of, like, when you're immersed in a culture and, like, you're around.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen a straight woman who like only hangs out with gay men out in the wild around no gay men? She looks nuts. Yeah. She looks all of her like things. She's snapping for no reason. Yeah. It's like really fucking out of control. She looks wild. She looks offensive.
Yes.
Looks like Taylor Swift. No.
And what's interesting is that two things. One thing I said that I didn't want to forget is that there was a documentary that came out. Speaking of documentaries, unlike Dangerous Woman Diaries, Madonna has a documentary that came out around that time called Madonna Truth or Dare. And it does a very good job of showing her. The whole point of the documentary was not just showing what a cultural phenomenon she was at the time, because you see these really famous people come to her concert and I think like Warren Beatty and Kevin Costner show up at one point. It's crazy. And like, I don't remember it very well because I haven't seen it in over 20 years. But one thing I'll say is it shows how she is kind of a mother to her dancers and who are mostly gay.
Mm-hmm.
And how she really like takes care of all of them. And I do kind of sense that with Ariana. I would say the difference is Madonna really truly had a maternal instinct in the sense that she was very close to them. I think Ariana, it's the other way around, where it's almost like the opposite love language, where it's not acts of service for her. It's like having them around to fuel her up, not the other way around. And
she's like a little sister. I feel like she treats them like they're a family, but like she's like,
well, I would say she treats them as the mother who's like, okay, whatever you want, I'm buying.
Yeah, and then, that's so funny.
You know, and like, and she's there. But I don't know. I mean, I can't speak to it because we're not there. But I feel like a lot of it is having people around to keep her, like, her thoughts going rather than being like, you know, I'm sure she's listening to whatever anyone has to say around her. But it's obviously a lot more lopsided.
Can you imagine her listening to someone just talk about how their day was for more than 5 minutes? I don't know.
I have watched so many videos of her laugh where she's like, and like, I just picture that. But I think you're right about like, I mean, I think that's like most pop stars, but I think maybe specifically for Ariana Grande, because I think that she is a little bit of a wounded bird also.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it.
They're all like, we're going to help you fly. And she's like, okay. Like, you know, and so it's confusing. but
yeah, I don't think she has like I feel like everyone usually has someone that's like a grounding rod, mm-hmm. like someone to keep them in a certain leveled out. I think she has a mom and grandma that yeah. are very good about like being like I'm just so proud of you and that kind of thing. I mean, I'm sure they've told her like, don't do this or don't do that. But
she's like, I pay for all your stuff.
Yeah. That's what it comes down to me is like, I do think she has a support system there, but it's definitely modified support.
I mean, I feel like she puts the men in her life in that position. Mm-hmm. Like yeah. she wants them to keep her grounded.
She's codependent.
And yeah, 100%. And then she's like, wow, you're like really intense.
I think she likes being a very classic girlfriend. Like, I do think
totally.
I don't think it's anti-feminist in any way. I just think she likes to take care of her man and yeah. be very like.
Yeah.
I just think that's the type of person she is. And I think that part of what I don't know. So it's really hard because while all her friends and you know are getting mm-hmm. a certain amount of probably support and care. They probably watch her go triple on a boyfriend, and that must be frustrating.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But who, I guess that's
well,
that's
except for she, anybody, this song, she was a story yeah. of when she bought all her friends Tiffany's so, yeah. ring.
Which I love.
I love it.
Although I never will understand the like infatuation with Louboutins. Like, I just like I've never liked heels in general.
They're painful. I think it must just go back. Like, you know, Paris is so iconic, like, fashion, and yeah. like, it's just a classic. It's not even yeah. the thing itself is anything. It's just because it's such a classic. And it's like a piece to have in your closet if you're like, quote unquote, like, you know, a chic, whatever. Yes. The image of it.
I also think it comes down to this, that she's a petite woman and probably walking in heels is just a little bit easier.
Oh, yeah. So funny.
She's so small.
Am I being...
No,
like,
you're totally fine.
You're right. I'm fucking tall and heels like it hurt me so much.
Yeah, so
I just
I
don't
bet.
Like it because I walk like a man. Like, I like to walk with a hard...
Yeah.
I like a hard step.
I like boots,
yeah.
okay?
Yeah, I like a hard step.
Every single pair of heels I've ever had has been worn down to, like, the metal.
Totally. I also have nobody to impress. Listen, so I'm just, like...
Someone who has a hard step and a firm handshake.
Yes.
I relate, girl.
Good. Thank
my step is so hard that people downstairs are constantly banging on my ceiling.
Is that true?
Sometimes when I'm just walking around, it's true, and it's... When I'm like literally walking around,
I love the idea that someone has a broom.
No, they bang and then they go. Sometimes I'll get a text because I dumbly gave her my number and she was like, "What are you doing? You moving stuff around?" I'm like, "No, I just walked to the bathroom. I'm so sorry. I have to go pee."
It just sounds like that in apartments. Literally sounds like my neighbors are vacuuming and throwing furniture against the wall constantly. It sounds like they're 100% picking up a dresser and throwing it against the wall. There's nothing we can do.
And that's the biggest takeaway from today's pod. There's just nothing we can do, folks.
Yeah.
Should we talk about the genius?
Yeah, before we get into it, I just want to give all the credits.
Yes,
we gotta go through. So the song was written by Ariana Grande. Cadence, I don't know who that is. I've never heard that name before. Someone, and I'm going to pronounce this wrong because there's a lot of consonants without a vowel there. Nyomza Vitaya, Taylor Parks and Victoria Monet, as well as its producers, Tommy Brown, Charles Anderson, and Michael Foster, who also wrote and produced Thank You Next.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine, I believe. I might be wrong about that one, but I know Needy and NASA is part of this.
All the ones that everyone loved.
Of course.
Yeah.
Well, so the album is kind of split, and we've talked about this before, but the Cliff Notes version is you can tell who worked on which song because the more low-key, minimally produced ones are from this group where it's like really powerful lyrics but really understated beats and stuff. And then the real like big productions are from the Swedish producers, Max Martin and Ilya, the ones who produced like Taylor Swift.
Max Martin.
Whoa. Did you guys know that Tommy Brown and Victoria Monet dated?
Not a surprise.
Really?
Not a surprise.
Or are dating? It comes up dating.
Why did I say not a surprise?
Let me see. What do they look like?
Well, it says dating, but then this is from 2015, so I'm sure that's not happening anymore.
No, I'll tell you why I'm not surprised.
That's Tommy Brown.
There's too many. You hang out with all these people all the time. Someone's going to fuck.
That's true.
You know?
100%.
But I'm curious. Well, I have to go down that rabbit hole another time. I love when people date when they work together and it works out and then the results are good. Like that's my that's my like white whale because I don't work well with people that I also have relationships with. Just because it's all tied up so much.
Yeah, I
and
can't so, do that either.
But I would love that. Boat. That's what I want. Yeah.
You know what? That's not entirely true. I've definitely worked on stuff with exes and it's been fine, but it's very limited. Mm. And I've intentionally not invested too much because it would cross. I feel like it'd get too tangled for me. But I'll say this. Like,
great Maroon 5 song.
I do like, what's that?
Tangled.
Tangled, yeah. but I'll say this. I think that I agree with you. Like people who have like if they because I think if you work together eventually look someone's gonna fuck but also you mm-hmm. know that like everyone needs to be professional so everything usually as long as everybody stays cool about it
you know right. Some people can't be cool
I just want to say that's different in comedy because there's so many people in the scene
and we're bad we are rotten inside.
All right, well speak for yourself.
Okay,
but you know what, I agree. Okay. So,
I'm on outside too. So,
just want to say, so it was produced. We already got the producing credits out of the way, but it also contains parts. You know, My Favorite Things by Rodgers and Hammerstein.
No way.
Yeah, they
I know.
But to the point that they're credited as songwriters.
Yeah, I
actually, hope so. Yeah,
yeah. I hope so. That's the part of the song I like.
And the music video directed by Hannah Lux Davis accompanied its release on the same day, and a remix featuring American rapper 2 Chainz was released on February 1st, 2019. I was reading directly from Wiki. That's why I said an American rapper.
That's funny.
American.
And then the song, by the way, has spent 8 non-consecutive weeks at number one.
She broke the record. Yeah. The Beatles record. Wild.
Yep. Because she had so many songs that were number one. And she, let's see here. She calls it a friendship anthem.
Yeah.
And
it's kind of like,
accurate.
You remember when like Destiny's Child and what's that movie? Charlie's Angels.
Yeah.
That era when like it was like their music was everywhere. But also whenever I thought of either of those things, that movie or Destiny's Child, I thought of just like friendships and kicking ass, and that's like all, like there was like the Survivor independent woman era. Yeah. That it reminds me of that feeling. I mean, I don't know. I can't hold a candle to Destiny's Child only because in my memory there's nostalgia, so it's really
not
hard.
Only that, yeah. That was a different type.
It was just
pop.
Different time.
That was also a different era of like. Of if anything, I mean the full opposite. If anything, being like, I don't need anything. You don't need to buy me anything. I'm fine on my own. Yeah. And she's literally like, I own you. Like,
yes, it's gotten like it's upgraded in the swagger, for sure. But it reminds me of that. Like, I'm thinking of girls who are younger, who you know, like growing up listening to this. I imagine it's very. What's the word? Like not.
Oh damn! I forgot how it affects kids.
It's affect. What's the word? It's formative. It's very formative.
Well, something I think about is that there was this group that I liked a lot that came out a few years ago called Holy Child, and they called themselves Brat Pop, which was the intention was. But their stuff was intentionally subverting that kind of thing. So it took this very bubblegum poppy sound and talked about like being very, you know, like. Lavish and over the top, but in a way that also was like, we feel empty inside by living this life. It was very critical of it. So, now, I feel like a lot of, and it was kind of ahead of its time because I feel like now a lot of pop stars are starting to do that in a way where they're like, I'm not sorry. I think Ariana does it well, but one artist that I'm in conflict with about that sometimes is Kim Petras. Because she has a song called I Don't Want It At All where she talks about, like, I want all these fancy things, but you got to buy them for me. And it's a fun song. It's so catchy. I listen to it all the time still. But when I sit down and let the lyrics happen, like, I really, like, take them in, I'm like, this is bratty music. And I guess it's weird because it's suggesting there's still a level of empowerment to it. But I would guess if you were to interview her about it, I've never really read what she's had to say about her own music, but if Kim Petras addressed it, she would be like, well, it's just a fun bop.
Also, she works with Dr. Luke, right? So does she write her own songs? Or, I mean, like, who's actually putting those words in her mouth?
That's true. I mean, well, I think she probably... Well, she's written some of her own songs. Yeah, I mean, I'm sure she... Because he's a producer as well, so I do wonder how much of it's her writing, but I'm like, she's still crafting an image.
For sure.
I think I always forget that there are children that are influenced. Truly.
These are like Ariana is big enough now that kids who are like in their like 9 to 13, like, it's the equivalent to how we think of Britney and Destiny's Child. Yeah. Like, they're going to be in their 20s and 30s and being like, I grew up listening to Ariana Grande.
And I mean, that's why I'm like, as an adult, I'm like, fuck yeah, money is fun. I like money, spend it.
What's crazy is Rodgers and Hammerstein's like, label or whoever their estate gets 90% of the royalties. I don't know if you knew that.
Oh, wow. Whoa, that many?
Yeah. Oh, I thought you knew that. Remember, because she says that in Monopoly, she goes, give that 90%. That's what she's referring to.
Yeah,
in order for them to use it, she had to give 90% of the royalties to the song.
Well, she more than made up for that in that record.
She's doing fine. Yeah, exactly.
She really took a hit there.
Do you guys know Megan Thee Stallion? And I feel like this song reminds me of a lot of like that kind of swagger, where it's like, it's not like, it doesn't feel selfish to me in her talking about having all these material things. Well, do you know what I mean?
It's also like kind of realistic in... Like, if the shit that she says, like, is it that over the top for how rich she is?
No, but it's that you don't usually hear rich pop stars talking like that.
Right. You usually only hear this kind of bragging and rap. One thing I'll say in regards to Megan Thee Stallion and Cardi B and any other female rapper is that in rap, it's a different kind of currency. And not only that, but it's even more powerful coming from Cardi B or Meg Thee Stallion because they actually... They're
also women of color.
They're women of color, but more importantly, it's not just that. They also like climbed a lot higher of a hill to get like that mountain.
Oh yeah, Cardi B.
Cardi B, you know, she was a sex worker, you know, and Meg Thee Stallion's still in school. She's literally getting her degree right now.
It's so funny.
Choice, she could easily have stopped. She's like, I'm going to finish school. She claims she's writing a horror movie, so she has my vote for president.
Hilarious.
Yeah, and... Ariana, also a big fan of horror movies.
Really?
Oh, yeah. She loved...
See, the thing is like, I don't really take any of her interests seriously, and I can't explain why. Like, when she says she likes something, I'm just like, sure you do.
No, this isn't just her saying she likes it in an interview. Like, she posts Instagram stories about how great Haunting of Hill House was.
No, but I know what you mean, because I feel that way about when she was talking about a Jim Carrey fan.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I'm like... Okay, but she was like, oh my God, Jim Carrey fan 42 or whatever. I would have been so excited. And her saying her AIM screen name was Jim Carrey fan.
I also want to be like, that's like, weird.
It's weird, but also it's like, I it's nice. I don't know if I believe you. It doesn't really matter because obviously we all like Jim Carrey, so who cares if your screen name was. But the way she played it up, it was like, this is the greatest thing, single greatest moment in my life. I'm like, I've never heard you talk about Jim Carrey.
Especially when people are child stars. Right. They're like, when I was a kid, and we're like, I'm sorry, when you were on Disney, what was it? It's like, when I was a kid, I idolized this person. It's like, I'm sorry, rewind. Where were you when you were a kid?
Right. I could also see her really liking The Mask, though, because I think her and I have a lot of similar sensibilities in like the weird humor that we used to like. And so that makes sense. But I just don't think that her screen name was Jim Carrey fan. Do you believe that? I don't know.
I
don't believe that.
No, I think that.
Any proof? Immediately.
I mean, here's the other thing. Nobody ever is like makes their screen name like that kind of. I mean, don't get me wrong.
Although, I do know people who made their emails after like a heartthrobs.
No, but
yeah, I knew like BSB.
Sure, but well, but that's
Jim Carrey is hardly a heartthrob.
No, but I mean, like, when people do it, it's not the name of the person. It's like something like somebody stop me 235 or like, you know, do you know what I mean? Like,
no,
alrighty then, 1, 2, 3.
I'm taking that back because I think it's maybe me not believing that Jim Carrey had that. But no, I've seen that with like Ben Affleck girl or whatever.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I've seen it. I saw it with NSYNC and Backstreet Boys all throughout middle school.
That was literally, I mean, Georgia Brooks, I can say that she was on our pod and she did it on my podcast, but she just had a confession where she said her email was like Ben Affleck's.
See, that's so funny because I was so self-centered growing. I was like so desperate to like be the center of attention that I was like, I will never, never commit myself to someone that much.
Well, I for me, but that's what I mean. Like it's saying like what Ben Affleck's like wife or something, right? Or it's something where there's like just saying
Jim Carrey fan.
That's where it's a weird thing.
I bet if you Google. Like, there's Ariana Grande fan. I'm just saying Jim Carrey didn't seem like he had that kind of sway.
Right.
But we should move on to the lyrics.
Yes, let's do the last part.
Okay, so we go through genius.com.
Yes.
You know, because...
Because the fans write academic level annotations.
Well, it's fucked up that it plays on Spotify in the car because I'm going to get in an accident because I like want to know the deets.
Yeah. Well, you're going to get them here so you can drive safe and sound to the house.
Can't
wait. So let's see what it says. Okay. Well, girls with tattoos who like getting in trouble. Do you guys know how many tattoos Ariana has?
7?
No, she's got way more than that.
Oh, really?
24?
Yes. Did you know that?
I felt like I knew that, but that was also a guess.
She has 24.
Whoa, I didn't know she had that many tattoos.
She's got little baby ones.
She has tiny, she's got like ones like on her hands and stuff.
Yeah, okay, that makes
her
sense.
Her Chihiro tattoo is visible on her arm. So again, it says Japanese theme also appears in some visual motifs in the video. I truly think she thought she was getting away with all that appropriation by leaning into Japanese culture without even thinking that like, if the people in your video are not Japanese and you're not Japanese, nobody's going to make that connection. Okay, so lashes and diamonds, ATM machines, buy myself all of my favorite things. Verses 1 and 2 are an interpolation of my favorite things. We already talked about that. Yeah, let's see. Ariana withdraws from an automated... this is...
Oh, please read it. Very, please
very
read it.
Oh my God, the nose. I love this.
Automated.
Ariana withdraws from an automated teller machine, and that's an ATM, and flexes her cash flow, highlighting the contrast between her favorite things and Maria's favorite things. She even tweeted this line over a month before the song's release. And it's a picture of a ring and then lashes and diamonds, ATM machines.
Wow. That's a terrible picture.
Yeah.
It's just like a blurry
It looks like a dick pic. It's a sparkly
dick
pic.
It does. It does look like
it's like a dick with a ring on it. Doesn't it look like a...
It does look like a dick pic.
It's so funny. It looks like it's like a... Like, just bought this fancy cock ring and it's like...
Hilarious.
For anyone listening, it's on Victoria Monet's. She tweeted it in like November what?
November 29, 2018. Wow, it's been that long since this song came out.
Well, no, that's when they didn't release it. You want to know? I actually remember where I was when this came out. This is so crazy. I had walked out of... watching the movie Glass, the end of the Unbreakable. I saw it with Zach Noe Towers, who did the very first episode of this podcast.
Shut up.
We walked
Does
out.
Does he even like Ariana?
No, he bought some. I mean,
he's a Taylor fan.
He's a Taylor fan, so he likes Ariana.
So he named our podcast. So.
Yeah, but he did name our podcast. He came up with Pot as a Woman. But at the end, when we were like, "What's your favorite Ariana song?" He was like Taylor Swift, and we were just like, "You're dead."
What a fucking idiot.
Well, take it down a notch, Lindsay.
Sorry. I mean, look, I'll say it to his face. Let's get him on the phone.
No, I know. I've seen your Twitter back and forth.
I'm going to be canceled.
I want to jump in.
I'll be canceled, for sure.
Can't wait.
For sure.
Let's get canceled together.
We're all going to get canceled. I mean, honestly, Ariana could get canceled. But you know what? We're going to keep talking about it.
You know what? I want to say this about that. Anyone who's super duper wealthy, if it's being canceled for a cultural...
Just means you get to go off and enjoy your money.
Yeah.
Like the best possible thing.
The problem with trying to cancel people who are making cultural infringements and why it'll never take, in my opinion, is because it's not there's just not enough there. This is a person who's really wealthy and it's not gonna do anything.
They have enough fans that they even if they cut their fans in half and they only ever talked to them again and didn't grow, they would be fine. So it's like very hard to cancel someone who has stans. Right.
There's also like anytime somebody is like accused of like not anybody, anybody, somebody like Ariana's accused of like appropriation. If you go through the comments, it's like literally like people fighting each other being like, well, I'm a person of color and I think she's fine. You guys are overreacting. And it's like, excuse me.
Yeah. No, you're right. And it is like, it's this weird circular conversation where nothing really gets solved. And the truth is people still listen to Seven Rings. Yeah. That's why
it's almost like white feminism.
It is. Yeah. It's truly just because people need something to pitch to bustle.
Ooh, shots.
Ooh.
Fired.
Girl.
Okay.
But speaking of, okay, let's talk about this line because she has a response. So you like my hair, do you think I bought it is the line that has a lot of controversy for many good points. And, you know, we've talked about it a lot on this pod. But here's what Genius says. In October 2018, she posted a picture of herself on Instagram with the caption, "You like my hair, gee, thanks, just bought it." Blah, blah, blah. Princess Nokia accused her of stealing it. Ariana responded in a since-deleted Instagram story with a repost of a fan's comment. "White woman talking about their weaves is how we're going to solve racism." After some backlash from posting the fan's comment. So just to clarify, that was a fan saying that, but she reposted it.
Which I would say is a bad move.
That's bad.
Bad
that's
move.
Bad.
Yes. True. Let your fans say that. Don't jump in. Like,
bad character
that's not,
move.
Don't do that.
Bad.
Yeah.
So Aria apologized. I think her intention was to be like, yay, a white person disassociating the negative spirit. I don't know that it's negative, but okay. The negative, sorry, that's Teresa talking. I'll read the full quote. I think her intention was to be like, yay, a white person disassociating the negative stereotype that is paired with the word weave. However, I'm so sorry if my response was out of pocket or if it came across the wrong way. Thanks for opening the conversation and like to everyone for talking to me about it. It was never my intention to offend anybody.
Fair.
I thought that totally. Was a good response from her. It doesn't excuse it, but it shows that she is not afraid to jump in right away because she's like on stories. Yeah. It's not like she had a publicist do this.
Totally.
And not afraid to just talk openly. And also, more importantly, the thing that we always forget is like she's not afraid to be wrong. And I think that's so important in this conversation, especially around sensitive topics like race. A lot of times people are so afraid of the conversation that they shut down and like, I don't want to talk about it.
They don't have it.
Totally, yeah.
But she's okay being uncomfortable, which I like about her.
You have to be wrong in order to learn. Like, you have to be wrong.
What's interesting, I'll say, I think she also handles it well, because one of the only the biggest problem with apologizing online in social media is that it's never enough.
Yeah.
And at a certain point, she can say sorry and mean it, but everybody's still going to be like, well, it's still here. It's still a problem.
People are wild.
But you can tell when she bows out of the conversation. Sure. She's like, I did the work I needed to do, because and I know this has come up a lot with comics. There's some comics who just won't apologize because their whole thing isn't that they don't, that they're not necessarily sorry. They see it as a slippery slope where it's like, well, now I'm going to have to apologize every fucking time. And so she's very good at being like, I am genuinely sorry for this. And then she's closed the door and moves on to the next.
I think it's a very good example of healthy boundaries.
Yes.
Well, I think that what you get at is, you mentioned something about like, people are, I don't remember the exact word you said, but the idea that people are not mad at her at a certain point, they're mad at the situation, which is true. And they're right to be.
Oh, we were talking about this off pod. Yeah, you're right.
Oh, okay. But they're right to be. It's like we were talking about La La Land. Oh, maybe this was off pod.
This
was
off pod as well.
The idea that when you're at a certain point, you're just mad about their circumstance. And I think you're right to be mad, and you're allowed to be mad. But at a certain point, it's nothing specific to her at that point.
Yes.
And she's becoming an example.
I do want to say something.
That happens a lot, I think.
I thought I brought this up on another. I did a podcast where we were talking about movies, and I get booked on
you?
Pods.
Yeah, movies.
And there's a quote that stuck with me since I was 15 that I read. It's a Roger Ebert quote, and he wrote it. This was what's so crazy about it. He wrote it in 71 or 72 about the movie Dirty Harry, which if, for people listening who don't know, it's a movie with Clint Eastwood, who's noted conservative, and the movie is particularly pro vigilante, pro gun, pro cop, like it's a lot of things. He is a noted liberal, Ebert, and said, he's like, he still gave the movie 3 stars. He goes, it's a well-made movie, it's very effective. He goes, but it's also a very fascist film. You need to know that going in. And he's like, if you're wondering why I'm giving a good review, I think it's a good movie. But he goes, I don't think a movie's going to change minds. He's like, I think a movie is a reflection of the times and of the audience. He's like, so that's something to think about.
Oh, interesting.
And he says, he's like, so at the end of the day, we can't really blame the messenger. Now, at the time, politics and the way people talked about things, very different. And it was a lot more, it was either you were liberal or you were conservative. Now there's, you know, you're liberal, you're a leftist, you're alt-right, you're Republican.
Like, if you had
know
a divorce, like, you were liberal.
So, I think there's a lot of, I don't think we have the luxury of that kind of simplicity, but I do think the core of that sentence, why I refer to it so much, is because I do think that's true. I do think that a lot of this is, even if it's a misstep or something there that's like appropriating, there's also a lot of fucking people responding to it in a very positive way. And that's, I think, what's important, because at a certain point, if you put too much blame on the artist, that is telling them how to do their job.
Also, think about all the conversations we've had and the great guests we've had on this show that have brought new opinions to me, and I've like learned from them and altered. And like, I feel like I've grown a lot from the first day I heard this song, of just being like, oh, I feel off, and then not really diving into why. And now I'm like, I do like this song, and I have figured out why and like gone even deeper. So I'm like, it's opened up a cool conversation on a level that people weren't interested in having before.
And and I'll say, since we started the pod, in talking about that and in talking about like movies and pop culture in general, I have learned to just be more comfortable with just sitting in the complexity of it.
Yeah.
It's a complex song.
Everything is both. Like, that's like the thing. Everything is both. Everything, it's like, and it's okay for everything to be both.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And I think people don't realize that enough, because I also think about, like, we were talking about this a little bit before the pod, and we were talking about, like, I forget the movie, but where I was like, you know, this is a movie that supposedly is considered very like progressive. Oh fuck, why am I blank? Well, anyways, what I'm getting at is that like also there's stuff that's gonna be perfectly fine to consume that people aren't gonna find a problem with, but it's a mediocre work. So what do we do with that?
Okay. You know absolutely.
What
I mean?
Like it's like
sure.
You know, so
then you're just virtue signaling.
Right, exactly. But well, it's like with I kind of think use that too much because it's been so fucking used up by the wrong people that I
exactly.
But yeah, we're infighting at this point.
100%. But it's also it's like if you look at the lyrics on Lyric Genius.
What we want to look
I
at.
I mean, do you speak like that, Ariana?
Yeah, I know.
Is that how you talk?
Well, I think about... Did you hear the song Monopoly that she did?
Yes, yes.
So at the very end, I cannot stop thinking about that.
Yeah.
Where her friend says, you know, shout out to Cletus. She's like, who the fuck? And I'm like, why are you talking?
I know. But that's like, what I'm saying, too, is like, you're like, I don't even know if this is wrong. No, but it's like what I said with like the straight woman who hangs out with gay men all the time. You like adapt like certain things and then you're like out in the wild and nobody has the context that you spent your life raised by gay men essentially. And you're snapping all the time and it looks like you're being homophobic.
No, totally. There's there's a few people I know where I'm like I've thought about that and other people have asked me when we've like talked about them. Like, do you notice that they talk a certain way,
but
and then we're like, did they not get the memo that they're like a white person?
They should be more aware, but like if you're gonna write a whole fucking song, but then I'm like, who fucking wrote the song? Victoria Monet? Like,
Victoria's like, here's how this song bar goes, and then she sings it. And
that's
Ariana,
what I'm saying.
Like, okay, and it mimics it exactly.
Exactly. It's like, no, say it like this, and then it's like, could you imagine like.
I could see her coaching
her
like that.
Do you remember when Taylor Swift had that big thing about where she did Nicki Minaj's verse from Super Bass? Like people recorded it. Was it Super Bass? It was one of her songs, but she like was on a radio station and she like was like, Taylor, you said you could rap this part, and she does the whole Nicki Minaj verse, and people were so enamored by it. But I was like, oh, this is that thing where it's like a cute white woman being like, look at me rap totally. This really these fucking
bars.
But
bar, see, this is where we get into that whole the big picture, because this is like we're talking about the La La Land thing. Like, I'm bothered by the fact that she's a white woman doing that, but she can't change the fact that she's a white woman doing that. I guess she could be more aware of not doing that. But also, when you have a pop song. Like Super Bass, it's being sung in karaoke. It is kind of like
totally.
At that point,
and I think
she's
Nicki
reached
Minaj,
critical success.
And I think Nicki Minaj was flattered by it. Ultimately.
No, but I do feel bothered by that. Yeah. But when I try to think about why, I'm like, I'm just bothered that you have this privilege and that you're able to do that and it's cute. But then you don't understand why it was so hard that a woman of color got to that level.
Totally.
The same level as you. And you're kind of like trivializing it. Anyways.
Sorry. So, do we have anything else? Because
Oh my gosh. Okay, wait. But are there more lyrics you want to talk about?
We're like really,
I know we're running out of time. Okay. Let me see. There's another. Okay. I know. But let me see. Okay. Here's the one that says, "Yeah, my receipts be looking like phone numbers," which is
love it.
Great line. Big fan.
Genius says American phone numbers are usually 10 digits.
Oh my God. Shut up.
But without
Genius.
The area code, phone numbers are 7 digits, the same length as $1 million.
Wow.
Great.
Wow. So her receipts are millions.
No, they be looking. Like, let's be clear.
Girl.
They be looking like phone numbers.
I did like, there was one line I liked. Oh, it's not even highlighted, but ain't got enough money to pay me respect.
Yeah.
I think that's a real cute little, because it's kind of like, do you have money? You can't even pay
the
your
last
respect.
Thing I want to say about the in regards to appropriation, she also says, give me the loot, which is a very famous B.I.G. song.
Yes.
I will also then pose this really quickly on terms of that too. So like if she's working with a songwriter who's a person of color and they suggest a lyric or style and she makes it white, is that more offensive?
Well, here's her tip.
Yes, I think so.
Well, I'll say this. I also think she's making, she's talked about this in interviews. She's like, well, why can't we do the things, you know, if
I don't like the way that starts.
I already don't like that.
Yeah, I don't like the way it starts. Why can't we?
Okay, I'll say this.
Hold on. Let me just say. So she says that if a rapper or another big pop star like Beyonce can drop an album without telling anybody, I should be able to do that. I should be able to just cut a single when I want. She's kind of making a point that pop in general has these very strict rules where you have to put out a single 4 months before the album comes out and do all these things. And she's like, why can't I just get together, write a song about, and be braggadocious, you know, like be very like.
Totally.
And she's like, so this shouldn't be confined to one thing. But again, here's the thing that I just think she keeps missing the mark on.
Yeah. Because it's her receipts music, be looking like phone numbers.
Is rappers are usually come out of some, yeah. They don't come from just Boca Raton, Florida.
Oh my God, my favorite that she's from there.
They come from
God.
Pompano, which is down the street from Boca and is a lot, very close to where I'm from. And very like, it's considered, now it's being gentrified, I think. But you know, it's like the point is,
yeah,
she's not from Pompano. She's not from Miami. She's not from Liberty City. She's from Boca.
But I that's totally valid. Yeah. And I think, again, it's sort of like, well, it's the system. Because I think, it doesn't excuse it. I think it's good that we're having that conversation. But to what you were saying about, like, would it be weirder if she was saying it white? Like, putting it that way, I'm like, 100% it would. And it would also be weirder, and I'm glad she's not doing this, but this is a thing we see in entertainment all the time when people feel uncomfortable having, like, one non-white person in the writer's room. They're just like, this person makes me feel uncomfortable, so let's just have it all be white. And then you just keep having all white rooms.
You whitewash it. I mean, there's, like...
Because you're afraid, right? I've been in rooms where I'm the only non-white person, and I do sometimes where I'm like, should I bring this up that this is weird, or can I live with it? But then I realize I'm like, this is why I'm here, and it's annoying that I'm the only one. I'd love it if there are a few of us that wouldn't feel like they're always just looking at me, mm-hmm. like hoping that I'm going to play goalie to their offensive jokes.
Yeah. Totally.
Like, they should check themselves.
It's why, by the way, I don't talk about it too much in my comedy, very little, but, you know, I'm half Argentinian. Mm-hmm. I'm from, you know,
get
I
out.
Don't look it.
Yeah. We can only have, no, I'm just kidding.
Very funny, Lindsay.
I know.
I don't, well, because the thing is, I'm very well aware of being white passing, mm-hmm. and that privilege, and also being half Jewish and having, that's the side I look like. And, mm-hmm. and, you know, even though I spoke Spanish before I spoke English, it's still something that I'm like, yeah, I don't shoot for diversity hires or any kind of thing, because that feels to me not like very bad.
Right.
Cause I've had people tell me like, well, why don't you try to work on a show where it's like primarily Spanish? I'm like, first off, I can speak Spanish very well. Reading and writing is a whole nother story. But more importantly, like, I don't know if I would bring that whatever sensibility they're looking for. Like, I don't know if I have a background where, you know, I grew up in a house where I had a single mother, who spoke Spanish, but also, like, we grew up in South Florida. I don't know. I didn't grow up in the same level of, like, I grew up pretty poor, but not, like, in a way that was, like, I don't know. I don't know what I'm getting at with it, but what I'm saying is, like, I think what a stereotype of what people think growing up poor in Spanish means. We didn't go to church on Friday nights for like 5 hours. We've never been to Spanish mass. It's very long.
But I do think I totally respect that, and I think that shows that you're, you know, an intelligent person. You've like thought about this, but I also think like your experience is also not your experience of feeling in between. Someone else will relate to. So don't sell yourself short. I mean, I totally think it's very admirable that you're thinking like, oh, I'm going to give up my spot or whatever. But I think that's also a product of the white society, because you're thinking it like, is, oh, yeah. I have this privilege.
What's so interesting is I think I'm part Native American. No, I'm just kidding.
Well, bringing that back to Ariana, I think that what I was going to say is I think we need bridges like that. Like,
especially totally.
Ones that people like Ariana, who, she's not perfect. She's not going to be the person who solves racism, but she, I like better than someone who isn't talking about it at all, like Taylor Swift, because she does, I think, want it to be better. And she is a bridge. And yes, she is white. And so she does problematic things by nature of white people still being in power, right? Because in an ideal world, when a lot of people complain about this, they just want to see more parity across the board.
Yeah.
If there were just more artists across the board that were successful on that level, that were people of color, I think there would be less conversations about the ones that were white.
Yeah. And I never, by the way, the other thing is I also grew up in a household that was like, never, if you're Spanish, a lot of it's very Catholic, very pro-life, opposite my house.
But that's okay, because that's your experience.
Which
I mean,
I'm so happy about. No, that's what I'm grateful for. Yeah.
Other people
at.
Might relate. I mean, it's the same thing with feeling Asian American. I used to be like, I got to pick Asian or American. Now that movie, The Farewell, is out. I'm like,
oh my God, I love that movie.
I mean, there's a whole group of people who are like, oh, we all grew up like this. So I think it's important to put your voice out there.
Totally.
Is what I'm saying. So don't sell yourself short.
Yeah.
But yes, I feel like we covered, do you have any other thoughts about the song?
No, I mean, it's a fun song. I think if you, It's a fun song. It does make me laugh how obviously when you read the lyrics, it when say them like piece by piece, it is really funny how insane it sounds.
Totally.
But at the same time, it's a very I could also never go in between shit. Yeah. So, you know, but anyway, no, I love it. Great song.
So last question.
Yes.
We rate the song out of 5 high ponytails.
Oh, love.
What would you give this?
I mean, you have to get out of 5.
Yeah.
I was going to do it out of 10. I mean, you got to give it 4 out of 5.
4 out of 5?
Yeah, you got to give it 4 out of 5.
That's what I would give it.
Okay.
That's
And I'll tell you why, because it's a very fun song, but it's not, it's like a summer blockbuster to her Oscar-worthy work on that album. Do you know what I mean? Like she, when you have these other like really deep textured songs versus this one where she's like, it's just a fun friendship anthem, as she calls it. That's exactly, it does exactly what it needs to do. Just even a little better than
that. Yeah, it says, been through some bad shit. I should be a sad bitch.
But yeah. Oh, and then should be a savage.
Yeah, like, who would have thought it'd make me a savage? Yeah, that's great. I'm done with the song because that's great.
Right, that's all you need.
That's all I need. That's 4 out of 5.
And how about you?
Okay. Okay, I'm going to give it a lower score. I'm going to give it a 3. I still really like it, I think, but compared to all the other ones that I've given high scores to, it's just not the one that I go to the most. I think when it comes on, I jam to it. It's a bop. A lot of it made me really uncomfortable when I first heard it. It's because I've heard it over and over. It's made me less uncomfortable just because it's out there. And I do think there's lines that I really like, but when I think about her saying it, I'm like, that's weird. Like the stacked up like my ass. I'm like, I love singing that, but I'm like, you don't got an ass, Ariana. You don't got an ass.
Also, that's why I'm like, who wrote that?
I know. Yeah. So I'm like, the lyrics are great. It's a great song. The fact that she's singing it, it does make me think twice.
When she starts, by the way, it keeps my theory is when she's twerking or doing any kind of thing where she's got to do like a, like some showing off the butt. I think that that's why she wears her like windbreakers or whatever jacket where they're like kind of almost hanging off of her.
Yeah.
Because I think she and Madison had brought that up. She's like when we did that episode of Success, she's like she's got this bony ass, and I'm like yeah, exactly that. And when she said that, I'm like, oh my god, that's why she wears all these things that kind of have like almost seem to cover but make it seem like there's layers happening.
Yeah.
But
when in reality.
Yeah. Not, well, okay, well.
In reality, it's a poo-poo body.
We're not shaming. So thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you for having me.
Where can we find you on the internet?
You can find me on Twitter at Lindsay's Face, and you can find me on Instagram at BigStuffWLindsay or Lindsay is a cat.
And look for Baked Stuff on the internet.
Yeah, and it's coming to Lyric Hyperion, baby.
I think, when is it?
August 11th.
I think this won't go up until after.
It's okay, then don't come, but look for the pics.
But if you're in LA, this comes up for the 11th. Go to
treat it, baby.
And you can find me at Eli Olsberg. Us at Pod
Stickers. Check it out.
Big fans of Bottom. Thank you so much for everyone who has. We love you. And we'll see you next week with the song. Thank you next.
Oh, shit. Bye.